You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salivary.
Hey everybody, this is Jordan Elter, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio. I am your host, Kelsey Mullen, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. And joining me, as always, in this holiday season, our last show before Christmas, Mr. Brendan Lear from Edmonton, Alberta. How are you doing, Brendan?
I am very well, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. And first thing I got to square away as we start the show is, you know, there's been a couple episodes where we've been cracking jokes about the pending apocalypse in Vancouver and yada, 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 for all those who've been listening to the show regularly. But some people have been kind of getting a little bit annoyed with this man, and, you know, maybe we just want to say, you know, for those people that have had some, you know, it's not like anyone's seriously been mad, that's what I'm trying to say, but I've had a couple people mention that, you know, they've had some tough sledding in the last couple of weeks in Vancouver, because it's been pretty crazy out here, man. There's been there's a big windstorm again last night, people are out of power, different parts of the city again, so our empathy.
I actually heard that if you go to Starbucks and buy your mocha frappuccino, that it's very possible that the lid could actually blow off on the way back to your Mercedes.
It is possible.
For those people, I actually feel very sorry, and I shouldn't be so insensitive.
On that note, let's get into some MMA talk. Like I mentioned, it's going to be our last show before Christmas, and the next week we'll just be doing one show, but we've got Brock Larson coming on the program. He's one of the up-and-coming welterweights in the UFC, guy with 21 in record. You don't really hear a great deal about him, per se, but in the Midwest, I guess people are very well familiar with Brock Larson and the success he's had so far in his career. So he'll be on the show. He's coming off a win at the recent Ultimate Fight Night. And then one of the IFL's best heavyweights and arguably one of the better heavyweights outside the UFC in North America is Ben Rothwell, and he'll be on our program too. So a couple notable fighters, guys whose careers are well worth watching, and some guys to keep an eye on, Brendan.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very good show. I know we've been following a lot of the IFL fighters as they sort of built up to their final in the season, and it's going to be very enjoyable. And, you know, hopefully in Canada we get to see it maybe within a year.
Still got a bitch about that, don't you? Just won't let it go.
I hate watching fights after they've happened. Yeah. You know,
no, it's
because
fair
you know, if you're at all interested in the sport, and you go home at night and open up you know, your favorite MMA webpage like Full Contact Fighter, you know, you just can't do that for weeks if you don't want to, you know, if you want to watch the fights live. So it's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, it sucks. Well, on that note, let's get into it. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League kicks off its 2007 inaugural season Friday, January 19th at the Oracle Arena. See Maurice Smith's Tiger Sharks battle Marco Huas's Condor. Plus, sibling rivalry comes to life as Ken Shamrock's Lions square off against Frank Shamrock's Razor Claws. Be there Friday, January 19th, 7:30 p.m. at the Oracle Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 510-625-8497 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing Full Contact Fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fight wear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets, to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic Full Contact Fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a Full Contact Fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
This is Spencer the Kingfisher, and you listen to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Mr. Ben Rothwell. Ben, how are you doing today?
Doing good, thanks, man.
That's good. How are things treating you down in Iowa?
Doing good. It's staying healthy and getting in the hard training that we need to get in, and that's all I can ask for.
Yeah. You know, it's got to be good. You know, Ben, you did a story on you for Full Contact Fighter. I guess, I can't remember if it was last issue or the one before that, and I know you like to do some cooking. It's kind of got to suck, I guess, with the fight coming up for you December 29th. You have to... You maybe can't do as much cooking and indulge in the holiday meals as much as you would have normally.
It does suck. I mean, it's got to suck for any of our guys. I mean, it's Christmas time, and we all like to go back and to our homes and eat what we want. And, you know, I feel especially sorry for some of my other teammates that have to cut a lot of weight. It's going to be a rough one for us this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Going to just have a hell of a New Year's instead.
Yeah, we had Rory actually on the program too just recently, and he was pretty much saying the same thing. Ben, of course, is going to be fighting Devin Cole at the upcoming IFL Championships December 29th at the Mohegan Sun Arena. And Ben, what do you know about Devin Cole? He's lost a couple fights in a row now to Alan Goas and Christoph Szczesny. I guess he's more noted for his wrestling. Is that what you expect Devin's going to try to do, is take you down in that fight?
Yeah, I mean, he's a wrestler. He's not going to change. He's not going to become a stand-up specialist or ground specialist overnight. He's going to stick to what he knows no matter what happens. And, I feel he's coming out scared to fight, which isn't a bad thing. That means that he's training hard. I know he is. And, he's going to come out after me because, you know, I know he's called some guys that we're mutual friends with trying to find out about me and asking things. So that's definitely a guy that's concerned and he's coming to fight. My view on the fight is that he is gonna win. If for him to win, he's gonna have to grind out a three round decision. Yeah, every fighter has that percentage of hitting a knockout by throwing their hands or catching a submission. I just feel that his chances, his ratio is a lot lower. While I feel I got a pretty good high percentage chance of hitting him in a submission and a very, very high chance of hitting him in a knockout. So that's just how I feel about the matchup.
Ben, explain to me the dynamic of fighting someone. Fighting in the IFL now is probably a unique experience for everyone, but you know you're going to be fighting specific guys, you know, so you'll be able to foresee your next three or four fights coming up, and then you may be fighting people one season and then the next season. Is that a different dynamic than just preparing for someone who you may or may not have ever heard of before and then moving on to the next person?
Sure. I mean, one thing, cool thing is that some guys – previously, before getting into the bigger shows, you were fighting guys that you may never heard of or never found footage on. So the IFL, you kind of, if you're fighting guys, you can always look back and kind of see what they were doing or how they're fighting. And some of the other aspects is that you might fight the same guy twice. Some of the fighters don't like that. Some do. I feel for some of the guys that maybe didn't got a good shake the first time or things didn't go their way, they feel like they always got their chance of redemption. And, you know, that's how Szczesny feels about fighting me again. I actually beat him, and I feel like I didn't get to show what I needed to show. So I'm actually looking forward to the February 2nd fight with him, too. Not overlooking my next fight by any means. I'm just, it's already a done deal. We're going to fight. So in that aspect, I like that because I know what he's been doing and how he's been fighting. And I really feel like I'm going to make it right this next time.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about Christoph and his upcoming fight against Mike Whitehead in a second, but I just wanted to go back to your last fight, Ben, the win over Wojtek Kozlowski, because the last time I talked to you, you were preparing for your fight with Wojtek. And, you know, you got the first round submission, key lock, pretty much, I guess, went as well as you could have hoped for. Your thoughts on the fight, Ben?
The guy came in with a record where a lot of people may not even looked at the fight, whatever, and I didn't. I mean, I remember even at the weigh-ins, I can't say the name, some of the outside people come up and they're like, "You're not worried about this guy, are you?" I'm like, "Hey, man, you got to worry about everybody." I go, "I dropped my guard and this guy's going to catch me to something." And he came out to get me, and he did exactly like I thought I did. And I wanted, you know, I always like to end my fights on the feet. You know, I'd like to get the knockout, but it's just he gave me what he gave me, and I just took it and went with it. So, you know, I came out you know, basically without a scratch and another win, so it's always a good thing. And I think the fight overall was exciting just because of the way he came at me, and I feel like I got another finish, and you know, hope it was good.
Ben, how many big guys are there at Miletic that you can that you can roll with and that can give you different looks?
Well, we got Brad Imes and Tim Sylvia. They're both monsters, you know, 6'8". They vary in their weight all the time, so I always got to deal with size. And then got just a large variety of guys, you know, from ranging from 240 all the way down. I have the ability to work with all the weight classes. Some of the bigger guys don't. So I like to roll sometimes with the real small guys because the technique is so much higher. You get to see looks, and the speed is all to deal with. So that's how I roll. I mean, our camp's just filled with, you know, there's like 30 guys in there all the time that are, you know, getting ready for fights.
And is Mike Whitehead still training with you guys as well? Is he another heavyweight that's at Miletic still?
No, he'd spent, I don't know, maybe, was it almost 2 years? Oh, at least a year and a half here. And then, you know, he moved on. He goes around kind of like, you know, he's been filling himself out. And I knew one of his big concerns is he wanted to be closer to his home because his family stuff's in Oregon. So he's out in Vegas now training. And I believe he's joined with Don Fry's team on the Scorpions.
Yeah, I knew he was a member of Scorpions, but I wasn't sure if that was just because, you know, the heavyweight position's already filled, obviously, on the Silverbacks.
He wants 205. That was the deal. He wanted to fight 205.
Okay. So what are your thoughts, then, getting back to Christoph? Do you got a pick on that fight between Christoph and Mike?
Oh, I feel Mike should dominate without a doubt. I mean, yeah, anything can happen, but I feel probably should be in Mike's favor. Mike looked really good against Mark Kerr, so he can't be happy about that, because I see Mike's really working on his hands and could give Slezinski trouble, and at any time he wants, he'll take him down and beat him on the ground, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we last talked, you wanted to sort of give your version of the fight with Christoph. You know, some people thought that you were rocked, and you took contention with people saying that. When you look at some of his fights recently, he's turned things around, and you mentioned you guys are going to be fighting again in the spring, and you don't want to look past your upcoming fight, of course. But do you see anything new in Christoph's game? Do you expect it to be a tougher fight next go around?
I feel I've been watching him, and yeah, he's obviously picked up his training, but I feel like the guy I fought that night was the same guy that's been fighting these last fights. Like, he did the same thing that he did to his last opponents. He just got caught up with me, and, you know, I know it gave him some confidence. He felt he rocked me, and I'll still say it to the day. I mean, hey, if you hit me and you rocked me, great. I'll give you all the credit in the world. I give all my past opponents, when, you know, their dues, you know, hey, yeah, he got me, whatever. I don't care. If I still win the fight, it doesn't matter to me. But he didn't. I just don't want to give him that false sense that he did something he didn't, you know, because he was, like, beating himself over up on it, thinking that he had me. I'm like, dude, hate to break this to you, but you got to do more than that, you know, to take me out. And that's all there was to it. I mean, I just got caught off guard. I mean, not so much that. I was just off balance is more or less how it was. And I just stumbled back, and that was it. It pretty much felt like from that point on, I controlled the fight. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everybody's got their own opinion. So I'm just going to try to make up with it, show what I can really do February 2nd against them. Because my thing is, when a guy wants to fight me, that bothers me. And I mean, it's going to happen, you know, you fight better guys and things, you know, they're going to be tougher fights. But I definitely have to say that most of my opponents in my past are always like, yeah, they don't look forward to fighting me or wanting to have to fight me again. So I kind of take pride on that.
Ben, I was going to ask you, because after, of course, the 29th, you could very well be the dominant heavyweight in the IFL. And you also worked out with Tim Sylvia, who's a teammate of yours, who's the UFC heavyweight champion. And I was going to ask you, because you train so much together, whether or not you believe that you're an elite heavyweight. And as I look back over your fight record, you guys have actually fought. So tell us about that. And then tell me about whether or not, how getting a feeling from training with Tim, you rank up there in the elite heavyweights in North America.
Yeah, Tim and I fought both early on in our career. At the time of my shirt order, it says one thing, but I had about 8 fights, and Tim had 5. And we're both pretty new differences. Tim was training in with Miletich and I wasn't, so it's a big drawback for me. But the other thing is Tim was, had bigger guys to train with, and I had never fought anybody. It was like all the guys that fought that were my size are smaller, and I knocked them out right away. Tim and I locked up, and that was like a total learning experience for me. And I remember the very first thing I said when I came back to after the first round was, holy shit, that guy's big. And I was 19 years old at the time, and it was a hell of a learning experience. I just gave it hell, you know. I just went out there and just did my best, and I only had 3 rounds to do it in. I still see to this day, I'm like, there's a fourth round, I'm gonna got you, Tim. And he says, well, you don't think I won the decision, you know? He's like, I dominated that fight. I'm like, dominated? Pat Miletich, I love when Pat Miletich intervenes and goes, Tim, you got by, man. He's like, that fight could have went either way, so that'll be, I always like you when I hear that. But it was a hell of a fight, and we went back and forth, we were rocking each other, and, to his aspect for a 3-round fight, yeah, he actually got a couple takedowns on me, which you see Tim fight now, it would look crazy, except for the Munson fight. But, he had spent more time on top than I did, and I think that's what won him the fight. But it was a great fight, great learning experience. And I've always said, any of my losses, all I can do is learn from them, you know. And if I didn't learn my mistake, you're just doomed to repeat it again. So I've always just tried to take the best I could from them and become the best fighter I can be.
And so do you think you're at that point, Ben, where you're ready to step up against some more elite heavyweights? I mean, of course, there are some in the IFL, but do you see yourself, if you were hypothetically in Pride or the UFC, would you be competitive, you feel, in those heavyweight markets?
Well, in the UFC market, absolutely, without a doubt. I've always said that, you know, some of the fighters in Pride, I just feel, you know, it's just, again, this is my opinion, it's no knock in any organization, but it's just, I feel that's where the best elite heavyweights are. I know a lot of them are scattering right now. I'm not sure what's going to happen with all that, but you just can't deny fighters like Fedor, Nogueira, Krokop, Josh Barnett. I mean, I look up to those guys, and I feel that they're at the top of the food chain. And I always feel in my heart, if I had to fight them, I'm going to give them a hell of a fight. I think people would be like, holy shit, well, Ben Rothwell's got it. But I'm definitely on my way. I feel that. I mean, Tim Sylvia has been... done his job in the UFC, and I know what I can do. And I mean, you can ask Tim, Pat Miletich, anybody, be like, yeah, I mean, I take a lot of pride in the fact that Pat Miletich openly tells people, yeah, Ben Rothwell's going to be the next world champion. So I'll just leave it at that.
Well, with all the additions of the new IFL teams, there's more heavyweights getting thrown into the mix in the IFL. Is there any new heavyweights that have been, they'll be up for competition against you, Ben, that you feel are going to be good competition for you in 2007?
Truthfully, I think all the heavyweights right now are always a test. You don't ever, none of them want to be underestimated. I feel a lot of them, when they have to fight me, they're coming out bringing their best. I don't know why it is, but I feel like anytime somebody fights Ben Rothwell, we'll prepare to see that guy's best fight, because it seems like people come after me. I don't know why that is, but I definitely seem to get the best out of people. There's some tough guys. I heard Anton Jordi. I thought it was going to be Pedro Hizo, and who knows what could happen. They could just throw Pedro in against me anyway. But Anton Jordi is just, you know, he's a really tough guy, too. It's going to be on Marco Ruas' team. A real game wrestler from Brazil. I still give credit to Renzo Gracie's heavyweight, Brian Vettel. I mean, yeah, I knocked him out, but the guy is still tough as hell, and I think I'm really, really excited, kind of interested to see how he's going to do with the other heavyweights, because I think the other heavyweights are in trouble. I really do. I mean, he fought me, and that's just the way it is, but I think he's going to, if he keeps his head on, he's going to clean house. I mean, it's a big, strong guy at no submissions, so that should be interesting. Devin, of course, you know, we're going to see how this goes, but he's always in the mix. You can never, I mean, he might take 2 losses, but I mean, he got caught. He got caught up. That's just the way it goes. He's a, you know, great, got a great wrestling background. He's a real rough guy. He trains with Matt Lindland, and I know he's always going to be there. He ain't going to get tired, and he's going to be there. So an opponent that's like that's always game. So there's just a scatter of guys that are definitely interested to see how it's going to go. I'm not sure who Ken Shamrock's going to get. They've been tossing up a guy at 6-0, and Don Fry's got a relatively new guy. The Russians have a real new guy, so who knows? He could be tough as hell. He's from Russia, so who really knows how tough that guy's going to be. And Frank Shamrock's got a...
John Marsh,
yeah. So there's a veteran. That guy's been around. He's probably the most experienced next to me, so we'll see how he does.
Yeah.
Anybody else that catch your guys' interest?
Well, I was going to ask you about John Marsh because I just noticed that, as you mentioned, he'd been signed to Frank's team, and he's fought some bigger names in his past, and I'm not sure level of training he's been able to do the last couple of years, but yeah, I was going to ask you about John Marsh.
Yeah, he's fighting Ken Shamrock's team right at the get-go, and, just see where he's at,
Yeah.
So the next season then, Ben, how many times do you expect to fight if your team is successful? How many times are you going to fight in the season? And then the season's not 12 months, is it? The season's shorter than a year.
Yeah, it's the first three. All the teams have three fights up, and then ours is up May 19th is our last fight. We fight in Chicago against the Red Bears. That's of our three fights. That's then. Then they take the team that did the best, and they're going to get put into like another miniature tournament, kind of like what we're doing right now. And then there'll be a semifinals and then a finals. So just from the season alone, it's 5 to 6 fights. Because I'm not sure if the semifinals are going to be 2 rounds or one. From the printout that I saw, it's only one fight. So I don't know how it's going to work out. But
when we had Rory on the show last week, he was mentioning that you predicted a Silverback Wolfpack final, and I think he went with the Silverbacks and Anacondas. Is that how you recall things, Ben? Did you predict this final?
Oh, yeah. I just saw kind of where the Wolfpacks, how they matched up on their side of the bracket. But I tell you what, the Anacondas, that still is really close. I mean, there was some controversy there, and I can say what I want about what happened, but it was still close. But I knew the Wolfpack, I knew Malin was going to bring a game team. And another thing is that their team trains together like ours, and obviously, all the other teams out there could see there must be something to that that's working, because the two teams that are that way are both in the finals. So,
yeah.
Do you think that actually gives you a strategic edge, Ben? And one of the things about the IFL in its first season that I was very skeptical about was the teams didn't really look like teams. They were called teams, but it was a bunch of guys who were just sort of thrown together, and they were may have been training together and maybe not. Do you think that gives you a strategic advantage actually being a legitimate established camp and all working together towards the same goal?
Yeah, I do, absolutely. And I mean, just as I said, look at the two teams that are that way are both in the finals, because it may not be anything, it's everything leading even up into the fight. I mean, I used to go out to fights by myself and I might bring a corner man with me. Now I'm going out with four of my other brothers, my teammates, plus two, three coaches, and then sometimes we got a couple extra guys that get to come with us. You're there with like a family, and everybody admits on the team that the weight cutting's easier. I mean, just the whole experience is easier. You're a lot more relaxed. You got all the coaches there that are, at least our team is made up with we got Pat, and then we got a wrestling coach and a stand-up coach. So you got different things and different views of how to deal with things and the opponents and things you get to go with right before the fight. So for us, it helps out a lot. It's a great thing to have, and I think that I'm sure Lynn's team, they feel the same way.
And did you get we've been asking a lot of the guys this last week, did you get a chance to see the 60 Minutes piece on the IFL and the UFC? Yeah, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it was great. I called it, the IFL has a stock out, and a lot of us are involved with, and I called it that night. I go, just because of the way they showed it and talked about it, I go, the stock's going to go up tomorrow, and it doubled.
Yeah.
It actually doubled. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that it doubled means people were obviously watching and interested in the sport. And I think there was a lot of people that weren't before, and now they saw, wow, this is for real. It's a legit sport.
That's a bit of a sore spot for Kelsey and I, because we missed out on that initial IFL offering.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, you guys are all becoming stock analysts, etc. Is that what it's like these days at the Team Miletich? You guys, everyone walks in and you got the Wall Street Journal in front of you and everyone's surveying your stock prices?
Not quite. We kind of talk about it, but at my family's house it has been. It's pretty, that's hilarious. My parents and my brother and stuff, he got real involved with it. My dad keeps a very close eye on it.
If Sylvia read the Wall Street Journal, then he could actually use it to disguise the rifles that he carries around and make people less anxious.
It's true.
Say what? I'm sorry. What? It's so funny.
Last time Tim was on, Brendan and him had a discussion about their hunting guns, and they were sharing hunting stories with each other when Tim was on the program. So,
yeah, Tim likes his hunting.
Yeah. See, it was lost on me, Ben. I've never been hunting. I've fired a gun once in my life, but Brendan's a good old prairie boy, so he can do the hunting talk with Tim Sylvia.
Oh.
Yeah.
I never got to do the hunting thing.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess it's our loss, according to Brendan and Tim, but that aside...
I'm a peaceful man now. I don't hunt anymore.
Right.
Okay, Ben, apart from yourself, you train with a huge stable of guys. In your opinion, who is the toughest pound-for-pound fighter at Militich? Apart from yourself, of course.
Oh, what are you trying to do to me here? Because it's tough, man.
It's an expert opinion. I'm asking you an expert opinion.
Yeah, insider's opinion.
How long is the toughest?
A guy who you wouldn't want to walk into an alley with.
Oh, that's the guy who doesn't even fight. He doesn't fight at gym. He doesn't even fight against Steve Rusk. We make jokes about Fedor. If Fedor ripped on Steve Rusk's wife, what would happen if they met in an alleyway? I don't even know about the guy. I don't even know if I'd really want to fight him. But he's around 205. And the 205ers go, that man is my worst nightmare.
Really?
Oh, it's hilarious. Like, Mark Coleman Keener trained for the Grand Prix years back, and this guy was just tooling, dropping Coleman on his head, taking him down at will. Coleman gets up, throws all the shit. He's like, who is this guy? I don't even know who this guy is. Freaked out and left the training. Matt Lerner came and visited back, before we were doing all this, was a couple years ago, came and got taken down at will. Left and right. And Matt Lillen is a great wrestler, and even Matt Lillen was like, Pat, who is this guy?
Wow,
that's our boy Steve Rusk.
So he doesn't fight. Yeah. He's too busy with professional life.
He went 8-0, but then he got a family. He's got two kids, and he just But he trained. He's one of our coaches now, so you'll see him in the IFL behind the scenes there. But the guy's ruthless. He's scary.
That was a very diplomatic answer.
Yeah. Yeah, bring up the guy who no longer competes. Very, very well done. No, I can understand. It's like someone asking me who's the best writer for Full Contact Fighter. I might not want to give that answer publicly.
I couldn't do that to you guys. Yeah. Why would I do that? You're all great. I love all of you.
Right.
But that's like having the best football team in Alaska. Maybe you should, there's a vacancy for United States, the U.S. diplomat to the United Nations. Maybe you should take that post. I think that was the most diplomatic answer we've ever heard on the radio show.
Yeah, that's true.
Can I throw props all at least to two guys out of the whole camp that I really look up to?
Oh, of course.
As far as I think is pound and pound, two of the baddest dudes would be my two smaller younger weights, the lighter weights, Ryan McGivern and Rory Markham. I don't care what their records are or what happens to them. I watch these guys train, and they blow me away every day. I seriously, in all my heart, believe Ryan McGivern in time is going to be like the future Matt Hughes in his weight class. The guy is a fucking animal. And Rory he's on his way to becoming a star. He just is. I mean, the guys, they want it, man. And I'm just trying to be there with them, be the heavyweight version of those two.
So it sounds like you're a very tight team, and that's great to see. It's great to see that the IFL is actually taking this seriously, and this is flourishing into an actual team sport. So best of luck to you on the 29th, and I look forward to seeing your fight.
Yeah, take care,
man. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Merry Christmas, too.
Hey, Merry Christmas. A great holiday and a great New Year.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League continues its 2007 inaugural season, Friday, February 2nd at the Reliant Arena. See Boss Rutan's Anacondas battle Pat Miletich's Silverbacks and Antonio Inoki Sabres face off against Don Fry's Scorpion. Plus, the super fight between MMA legends Matt the Law Lindland and Carlos the Ronan Newton. Be there Friday, February 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Reliant Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 713-629-3700 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred, new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you. Joining Full Contact Fighter now is Mr. Brock Larson. How are you doing this afternoon, Brock?
Great.
Are you in the Minnesota state right now?
I am. I'm in Brainerd, Minnesota right now.
As always, how are things in your neck of the woods, so to speak, right now, weather-wise?
It's perfect. No snow, no nothing.
Yeah.
It's been nice.
See, I'm originally from the prairies up here in Canada, so I'm used to the winter climate. So when I talk to fighters who can somewhat empathize with what I've had to endure over my lifetime, I like to check out the weather situation.
Yeah, it's perfect here.
Of course, Brock's coming off a big win over Kata Nakamura at Ultimate Fight Night. So maybe, Brock, for those people who didn't get a chance to see it, maybe you could do a little quick rundown for us on your thoughts on the fight and what the game plan going in against Nakamura was.
Yeah, well, the fight went down pretty much how I figured it would, except for the finish. I figured I'd get a submission out of the deal, but it ended up going decision. And I won a unanimous decision. And it basically, I took him down and pounded him, quite a bit in the first. And then, second round, kind of more of the same. And, they're a little quicker on the stand-ups, than I would have liked. He was in the half guard and I was, tapping elbows from on top and, they stood us up and, a lot more than I would have liked, but I pretty much controlled the first two rounds fairly easy, with takedowns and so he had a good takedown defense, but I ended up getting all my takedowns, and then the third round I gassed a little bit, being that I'm blaming it on the 3.5 weeks notice. I dropped like 30 pounds in 3.5 weeks, so
oh, wow.
I kind of gassed a little bit in the third, and we ended up exchanging a lot more on our feet. And I think I landed a few more shots than he did, but it was close on our feet. And then takedowns were a little harder to get, of course. But I ended up getting two takedowns in the third as well, in the third round. And so I was a little more cautious in the fight than I typically am. Typically I go all out and a little more aggressive, and this time I was just a little more cautious and just kind of took my time and kind of wanted to get that first UFC win.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Well, like I mentioned, Nakamura was undefeated, and it seems like this is a bit of a trend from the UFC. They're bringing over a lot of the top flight Japanese fighters. What did you know about Nakamura going in, aside from his record, Brock?
You know, I didn't know much. I had one fight of his, and he was so much better than the other guy that it was really hard to get a feel for what he did. But I knew he had a really strong background in judo. And, so I knew I kind of had to nullify that. And I had a black belt, judo instructor from Brainerd, a friend of mine, Dave Bergen, come in and train with me a little bit. And, just to get used to that different style of judo, because I work out with a lot of wrestlers and a lot of MMA guys with Shirk and some of the top guys in the world there, but none of them quite do the judo that I'm not used to. So I brought in another guy and just to get used to that feel a little bit. But other than that, and his strong judo, that's pretty much all I really knew. I knew he could do submissions and stuff, of course, because out of his 13 wins, 12 of them were all rear naked chokes.
Yeah.
So I knew I had to keep them off my back and do that kind of thing. But, you know, I didn't know a whole lot. I actually didn't think his jiu-jitsu skills were as good as they were. I had a hard time controlling his hooks and stuff, and he was good. He was good on the ground, on bottom, which I thought once I got him down, I'd be as good on bottom as he was.
Now, you mentioned your other UFC appearance just briefly, and that was your only career loss, and that was to John Fitch in 2005. It was at Ultimate Fight Night 2. You lost to John Fitch by unanimous decision. So, I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, it must be a great feeling to get your first win in the UFC, but in between those fights, I mean, you had a busy 2006. I mean, you had something like 5 or 6 wins in a row since your last fight in the UFC, the loss to Fitch. What are your thoughts looking back on 2006? It's got to be a good feeling for you, I would imagine, a very successful year, Brock.
Yeah, you know, I decided to make the drop down to 170, and I think that's where I belong. I mean, typically I walk around at 90, 95, so I was only dropping, you know, 5-10 pounds to make 85. And now at 70, I just feel better. I feel stronger, quicker, and I really can control the fight a lot better, strength-wise. Because all the guys that I've went against, I've been able to, you know, stay in good position and out quick them and out strength them. So I think that was a good decision that we made as a team and of all that just. Dropped the weight, even though I didn't do it quite the way I should have for this fight, and all the other fights I've done it well and felt really good.
Now, and of course, moving down to 170, and you're talking about the fact that you feel you're a better fighter at that weight, and when you look at the welterweight division, I mean, the addition of yourself to the welterweight division in the UFC is just another great fighter thrown in the mix there. When you look around that division, Brock, I mean, I would imagine you probably agree it's hard pressed to find any deeper division in any other organization.
Yeah, no, the 170s are stacked. I mean, there's great talent, and those top three guys are in a league of their own, I believe. You know, you got Pierre, Hughes, and Penn. Those are the top three guys. I mean, there's not many people that can touch those guys, but the rest of us are all, I think, about in the same spot. You know, any given day, anyone could knock someone off and go up a notch, but it's loaded. I mean, there's tons of talent at 170, more than any other weight bracket by far, you know. You look at 85 and there's not quite as many names out there, but 70s is just unbelievably stacked, and I think that's another good reason why I should be there. I should be there, and that's where the toughest guys are, and I want to fight the toughest guys, so that's where I'm at.
Yeah, and Brock, I mean, you're a fairly well-known commodity in the Midwest MMA scene, you know, fought a lot for the Extreme Fighting Challenge, etc. Do you feel, though, Brock, that perhaps people sometimes overlook the fact that you are in the welterweight division, that you've got a record of 20-1? Do you sometimes, you know, feel that maybe people don't mention your name as often as maybe they should as far as contenders in that division go?
Yes and no. I don't think I've earned quite the right as some of the guys have. You know, they've been around the big shows longer, and I think I've got to earn that a little bit more. It's kind of my responsibility to catch people's eyes and make them talk about me. You know, you know, it's kind of nice being the guy that nobody knows much about and being the underdog and whatnot, but I think eventually they're going to be forced to talk about me and forced to put me in the conversation, I think.
Yeah, and you talked about training with Sean Sherk and training up in Minnesota, and for some of those people who aren't maybe as familiar with your background, Brock, maybe tell us a little bit about your mixed martial arts background and how you got into the sport and who your training camp usually is with.
Yeah, well, it started out in Brainerd. I started doing jiu-jitsu with a friend of mine, Jared Fairbairn, which owns the Kome Dojo in Brainerd here, where I do majority of my training. And then I did some jiu-jitsu tournaments, and Sherk was at the tournament, and Greg Nelson, instructor at Minnesota Martial Arts Academy, and they invited us down to come down there. And so we started training down there 3 days a week, as well as training in Brainerd. And then one day they just said, hey, you know, you should fight, you're tough, you should fight. And I was like, I don't know. And then I started fighting and started winning. And of course, you know, training with Sherk and Dave Manet and and Nick Thompson and all those guys, it's a good camp to get pushed in, and you know, I keep having those guys getting you and squeezing you and stuff, so it's a good place to go to get pushed. You know, you gotta go where the best are. If you're the top dog in your school, you're not gonna get much better, so it's good to have those guys.
Yeah.
I train down there 3 days a week still, and work on my striking and on my grappling down there.
And you're able to train full time now, Brock? Is this, or do you have to supplement your fight income with another job?
Well, I train full time in the winter. I get laid off. I do road construction in Minnesota. You know, it's seasonal, so
yeah.
Work my butt off in the summertime and then get laid off in the winter. And I kind of go 3 days at the Gatton, and I train 6 days in Brainerd. So I go down the cities and then I drive back and train at night in Brainerd. And so I train about eight to nine hours a day, 3 days a week, and then three hours on an additional three. And then I take either a Saturday or a Sunday off. So I train 6 days a week for the most part.
Now, obviously, the win over Nakamura, your first UFC win, has got to be huge, and I'm guessing it's probably the biggest in your career to date. But if we just sort of survey your record before the Nakamura win, Brock, some notable wins over the likes of Ryan McGivern. Stefan Potvin is a very tough Canadian fighter. Can you pick a win, Brock, throughout those other 19 wins that's probably the ranks up there as far as your career goes so far?
Well, I think the win over McGivern was huge because I was in a tournament where I had to fight three times in one night and ended up beating McGivern in the first round. And That was just a great win to go off fighting the third fight, winning that easily or that decisive, you know. But the Potvin fight, I think, was my most memorable win just for the fact that it was the first time I ever went the distance. Fought for 25 minutes, you know. Fought in the IFC, so it was a big event, and I think that was my prior to this one, it was my biggest win just because I achieved a lot of things that I didn't know I was capable of doing, like fighting for 25 minutes.
Yeah. What would you say, then, is your best attribute as a fighter? I mean, can you pick one area that you sort of prefer as far as the dictating a fight? Do you prefer to take it to the ground? Do you feel your best there?
Yeah, I like the ground better. I'm just still not as comfortable as I should be. On the feet, I can exchange, but it's just a comfort thing still that I've been fighting my own demons to get over. I like the ground. I think it's less chance of for me to get hurt or to get, you know, something bad happen because I'm not as comfortable there. But I can do it. I did it in the Nakamura fight. We exchanged quite a bit on the feet in the third round and stuff, and I did well. It's just a matter of getting my confidence there and doing more in the gym and, you know, that kind of thing is more than anything, just getting over my own self.
Yeah, well, when you look through your record, I mean, you've got a ton of submission victories. There's a few key lock wins that in there and some submission wins via strikes, too. Do you figure in that the wrestling part of your game is, you know, a lot of people mention your wrestling capabilities. You think that that's one area that where you in particular excel, Brock?
Yeah, I think, you know, wrestling and then my aggression. I'm typically very aggressive with my takedowns and with my strikes. It's all, you know, very forward pressure and overwhelming my opponents on the ground or on the feet. With strikes and stuff, and usually you overwhelm a guy enough, something comes up for a submission, so that's typically how I go. I just try to be super aggressive and stay on him and not let him breathe.
Yeah. Well, my last question for you, Brock, is do you know what's next for you in regards to the UFC, or do you have another immediate fight before you get back in the UFC coming up right away?
No, I do got, I got two more fights on the contract. And they have not let me know yet, but they said that they'd be contacting me on a later date, and they promised me they'd give me 6 weeks' notice at least. So that's a good thing.
Well, and you mentioned in the interview so far that you feel that you need to beat a few more notable fighters, some guys with names to sort of get your name up there in the welterweight division. As you survey the welterweight division, are there a couple names out there, guys that have a bit of a name for themselves that you think you'd match up against and that you'd like to fight?
You know, there's not any certain one, really, that I'd care to fight. I mean, I'd fight pretty much any of them. It's just, I wouldn't mind fighting someone that was on one of the TV shows, you know, no one in particular, just someone that's a household name that I can let people know that I'm better than some of those guys, hopefully. Yeah.
Well, it's definitely going to be interesting. As we talked about earlier, they've got so many options in the welterweight division, and you know, there's speculation abounds as far as what they're going to do with Diego Sanchez next, and then you've got George St. Pierre scheduled to fight Matt Serra. There are some reports now that Matt Hughes might not fight GSP right away, as far as after the Serra fight, that he might fight someone in between that. BJ Penn sounds like he's going to be competing at 155 pounds now, if those reports are accurate. So there's definitely a lot of options, and when you look at someone like Carol Parisian, his recent win over Drew Fickett, that kind of, I think, catapults him back in the mix. Your thoughts on that fight, Brock? Did you see the Parisian fight?
Yeah, I did. That was actually a very good, I was actually impressed with Fickett. I didn't give him a whole lot of credit until that fight. Carl was a very tough opponent, and they had just a great fight. Yeah. It was one of the better fights I've seen on the ground fight.
Brock, look forward to seeing you fight sometime in the spring in the UFC again. Thanks for coming on the show.
Right, I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Yep, bye.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
Hey guys, Kelsey Mowat here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Mowat must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Mowat before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any physical donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio as we wrap up another show. And Ben Rothwell, of course, coming on the program, and another Miletic fighter who's definitely, you know, not lost for words, those guys sometimes, you know, they can come out with some pretty good comments for MMA Radio, and Ben this time did not disappoint.
Yeah, a lot of those guys are really good guys. It's nice to see fighters with really good personalities and fairly reflective about their lives, and especially so diplomatic. It's also nice to see there are a lot of real gentlemen coming out of that camp, which is nice.
Yeah, and outside of Ben's fight, we talked to Ben about his upcoming fight with Devin Cole, but there's some other really interesting fights that night, and even in when you're discussing the Wolfpack versus the Silverbacks, and we had Rory Markham on the program, so we also talked about his matchup with Chris Wilson that's coming up. But I think one fight that could well be one of the more entertaining fights of the night is Ryan Schultz versus Bart Palowski, and it kind of remains to be seen whether or not Ryan Schultz tries taking Bart down. Ryan's known for wanting to stand, and of course Bart, is, especially in his IFL appearances, has really shown some excellent striking. So that fight has the potential to be very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely, for sure. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that card. I'm really looking forward to that card.
And then at middleweight, this fight as well. There's a lot of great fights that night, and Ryan McGivern versus Matt Horwich, two of the better 185-pound fighters outside of the UFC, and Matt Horwich, when you look at his record in particular, he's beaten some top-flight guys, and he's lost to some top-flight guys, but he's a fighter as well in the NFL, one of the better ones at 185.
Yeah, Horwich is kind of an interesting guy. It's tough to put a beat on him, and we have to get him on the show because he certainly has an unconventional fighting style, and seems to have a very unconventional personality as well.
Yeah.
So, I think one of the things I really like about him is he's always pushes forward. He's always very, very active. And he's one of those guys that, win or lose, he's a, quite an exciting fighter to watch.
And then we also talked to this about this fight a little bit with Ben, was the Christoph Szczesinski versus Mike Whitehead fight, and he was talking about Mike Whitehead had expressed some interest in dropping down to 205, but this fight will be at heavyweight. And as far as a heavyweight matchup outside of like something like the UFC, this is a pretty marquee matchup, I think. Christoph Szczesinski has had a great year. He's really turned his career around. He's really worked on his striking with Boss Rutten and Sean Tompkins. And then you've got Mike Whitehead, who I think people have somewhat forgotten about, and he took out Mark Kerr in somewhat dramatic fashion. And I think for Mike, Brendan, I think if he does beat Christoph Szczesinski, this will demonstrate, it would say a lot to the fact that he's definitely back. If he loses to Christoph, then perhaps some might just say, well, you know, he took out Kerr, and maybe Kerr was, you know, just isn't really fully there yet in his MMA return.
You know, I think with these IFL heavyweights fighting four, maybe five times in a year against the caliber of heavyweights, against the caliber of other heavyweights, in a couple of years, they could, I think they, you could argue that they could build up a stable of heavyweights that will certainly rival, if not surpass, the UFC heavyweights right now, which are nothing to write home about.
Depending on what of course happens, you're right. I mean, if some of these rumors are true regarding Krokop, if Heath Herring is UFC bound, you know, depending on those factors, yeah, you're right. It'll be interesting. And then the big super fight, of course, for that night is Carlos Newton versus Renzo Gracie. And, you know, we've talked about these super fights before, Brendan. Not necessarily always two guys in the prime of their career, but certainly very marketable fighters, people that a lot of MMA fans have watched for years, and entertaining fighters. And this fight, I think, is safe to say, is no different. Renzo Gracie versus Carlos Newton, and this has the potential to be an amazing jiu-jitsu display, just like their first fight.
Yeah, I think there's certain ways to put together these fights that works, and there's certain ways to put together these fights that don't work. So Pat Miletic and Renzo, I think, was a great idea. This fight's a rematch, of course, is going to be a great idea. I've heard rumors of Maurice Smith, Marcos Huas, which would be a great fight.
Well, I don't even think it's a rumor. I think it's confirmed. It's confirmed for March 17th.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So what I don't like to see is, you know, fights like Royce Gracie, Matt Hughes, you know, as sort of building up an artificial draw. That was a fight that I really didn't look forward to, and I'm certainly disappointed in the same respect.
And then the announcement from the IFL also this week of Jeremy Horn, and I'm happy about this because I've always enjoyed watching Jeremy Horn fight, and I'm really excited. They're bringing him back for a super fight against Nico Vitale, and that's, I guess, scheduled for January 19th in Oakland, California. So that's great news. And a guy like Horn, I kind of felt bad for him a little bit. You know, they bring him in to fight Chuck Liddell. He certainly has fought at 205 before, Jeremy has, but that is not his best weight. And it seemed like after that fight, he had I think it's safe to say, somewhat of a lackluster performance against Trevor Prangley, and then he kind of was sort of to the wayside, really, in the UFC. And for a guy who's an MMA legend coming off the loss to Matt Lindland, I'm just excited that he's decided to continue fighting.
You know, I think it's always great to see Horn fight. I think one of the problems and one of the knocks against Jeremy is he was out of the limelight for a long time, and he always had this cult underground sort of status for those few years that he was out of the limelight. He was the best 185er and so on and so forth. I think he's been tested, obviously, in ways that he hadn't been tested when he was fighting in those smaller shows against more lackluster competition. But it would be nice to see him sort of settle in. A lot of weight's taken off his shoulders now, I think. Not many people expect a lot of huge things from him. Certainly, you know, he doesn't have to come in and beat a Chuck Liddell or anything like that. So it would be nice to see him let loose a bit and just see him stylistically sort of be less conservative and flourish a lot more in the way that he's more comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, next week we'll make our picks for the upcoming UFC 66, but I wanted to take some extra time, because usually when we do the picks, we try to break down each fight a little bit more. But without necessarily making our pick, or maybe it will be rather apparent, I do want to spend some time talking about Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz. Brendan, I mean, really, whether or not people like the matchup or not, I think most people are really excited about it. Regardless of what the critics may say, it is going to be truly the biggest North American fight this year, I think it's safe to say. And it could set pay-per-view records. What are your thoughts on this fight, Brendan? Do you think it's going to be more of an entertaining fight compared to last time? Do you see Tito Ortiz being able to extend his presence in the octagon against Chuck Liddell longer than their first encounter?
Well, if we take Tito at his word and say that he's always fought in the face of adversity and he's always had a tough time, with injuries and things like that going into his last fights, and now he's healthy, then that's one thing to consider. I'm not sure. I think he certainly hasn't been, apart from his fight against Forrest, where he was really tested, he hasn't been really tested in the last year or so, and I think we'll see if that has been detrimental to him. I could see this fight being really exciting for myself if it was a build-up of one quality opponent after another, and he was peaking in the same way. But Chuck is sort of peaking after having beaten the best of the best. But, you know, he got caught in this Ken Shamrock quagmire over the past year. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not he can again withstand that kind of overwhelming presence in the first round and get over that hump. I think Tito will have the better shot the longer he can drag this fight in. The longer he can drag this fight into the second, third, or maybe even fourth or fifth round.
Yeah, I'd agree with that analysis. In particular, the parts about the Ken Shamrock aspect to it, and you do have to wonder. I mean, on the flip side, you've got someone like Tito Ortiz who maintains that was good for him, that he's been in peak condition all year round, training virtually all year round, which might not have necessarily been the case in previous years. But on the flip side, you're right. I mean, you look at Ken Shamrock; those are easy wins for him. Does he present? Did he present in his training for those fights? You know, any kind of potential as far as Chuck Liddell. I mean, was there any comparisons to what Chuck Liddell may do with Ken Shamrock for preparing a game plan? I'm not sure about that, and I think the answer is no. But with the Forrest Griffin fight, man, when I look at that fight, and I even look back to the fight against Vitor Belfort for Tito, and that's going back a little ways now, that is my biggest doubt as far as his ability to win the fight, and that is that beyond the first round against Forrest, he had a great difficulty taking Forrest down and really didn't, and was the loser of the stand-up against Forrest Griffin. He had some difficulties getting Vitor Belfort to the ground, and very somewhat comparable. I still maintain, when I've watched that fight several times with Vitor, and a very strong case can be made, I think, that Vitor beat Tito Ortiz in that fight, but that's kind of a...
Well, yeah, needless to say, I think neither the Forrest fight or the Vitor fight were dominating victories,
No. So I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, will Tito Ortiz be able to get Chuck Liddell to the ground and keep him there? And I'm not sure I can see that happening.
No, and neither can I. I don't hold out much hope for Tito in this fight. And I would love it to be a good fight. You know, I would love it to be a close fight. And I'm hoping for that. But I'm not sure. It's tough to say. You know, it depends which Tito shows up, and we really haven't seen Tito fight in a high-pressure, high-level fight for a long time now, a really, really long time. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not his canoodling with the lovely Jenna Jameson has sharpened his focus or dulled it.
Canoodling. And, you know, I guess this is one thing I wanted to talk about, sort of dodging around our prediction, and I think it's kind of obvious which way we're leaning in this fight, but Brendan, looking post UFC 66, there's certainly some very interesting things to consider as far as what happens. Where does the UFC go from here? If Chuck Liddell wins, what do you think happens to Tito Ortiz? Does he remain a strong figure in the UFC? One would think probably likely because he's a marketable guy, but I think there would be some questions as to how much of a star he could still be. What do you think about that? Do you think he still could be a top flight draw in the UFC if he loses to Chuck again?
Well, I think it's going to shake down this way. If Tito loses to Chuck and then he proceeds to beat the piss out of Dana White in their boxing match, I think he's gone from the UFC. I think his key to staying in the UFC will be to take a beating from Dana White, be humiliated, and then be able to fight in the UFC. So I don't actually see that happening. So I don't see Tito being in the UFC after this. I think there's a lot of organizations that will bring him across There's a lot of organizations that will pay him more money, and I think that's, you know, I think Tito sees himself as being as having a certain marketable stardom, whether or not he wins his previous fight, and I think that maybe is still the thing that doesn't fly with the UFC.
Well, I'm not sure exactly about his contract with the UFC, but you know, you might be right. I think that'd be unfortunate. I think there's still some great matchups that they could do. As much as we've kind of applauded the UFC for bringing fighters back in recent memory and having them compete again, there's still some interesting matchups that could be had if they were to keep Tito. Renato Sobral, I mean, what are their plans for him? He could definitely be a fight that right away stands out with Tito Ortiz. And then, of course, you throw Quentin Jackson in the mix. And what, you know, where does the UFC go from here as far as who does Chuck Liddell fight next? You would hope that the UFC would try to build up Quentin Jackson and give him a couple fights to warm up, to build him up to that point of taking on Chuck Liddell. So who would be the likely next opponent for Chuck after, if he does indeed beat Tito Ortiz?
Well, I think the thing is about I think Quentin's entry into the UFC is actually bad for Tito's prospects of staying there if he loses to Chuck, because they really are potentially interchangeable. Rampage is certainly a dynamic character. He and Tito won't fight one another. I imagine they won't fight one another, or wouldn't want to fight one another, seeing as they've been training partners and a long time training partners. Mm-hmm. So really, does Quentin's entry into the UFC actually hurt Tito's prospects of staying there? And I would argue, yes, it does.
Right.
And Jackson and Ortiz are going to demand the same kind of cheese as Jackson so eloquently describes it. So why keep two of these guys around if they can't even fight each other?
Yeah, well, I think there is some danger though, and you know, maybe we are overlooking the fact that Tito was you know, the star of Ultimate Fighter Season 3. He is a huge star in the States, so maybe we are discounting. One should be careful to, you know, not to dismiss or say that his exit from the UFC is imminent, because they would indeed be losing one of their more marketable fighters.
Well, I don't think it's imminent, but Tito has very much the mentality of a Matt Lindland. You know, he's not going to, you know, the cachet of him fighting in the UFC is meaningless. You know, he's not a young fighter. These guys aren't young fighters. They're well known. Their reputations aren't going to get better by fighting in the UFC, and they want to market their skills, you know. And guys in their last few years of their careers, they want to market their skills and fight for as much money as they can, and I think that's where their mindset is. So, you know, is the UFC going to be able to pay Tito to stick around, even though he's lost to, even if he loses, he's lost to Chuck twice, and, you know, Chuck's going to be the champion for a couple more years.
Right.
I don't know if they're going to want to make that investment, because believe you me, it's going to be an investment, and you know, more power to Tito. I think he comes out of this fight one way or the other looking good. If it's a good fight, you know, and if he takes Chuck four or five rounds, or you know, then you know, he's coming out of this golden.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's approach it from the other way then. Let's say that Tito Ortiz wins, and then I think the post UFC 66 speculation gets even greater. Let's say Tito Ortiz wins. Obviously, then, you would think that the UFC is going to look at a Tito Ortiz, Chuck Liddell Part 3. That's natural. So, where do they go from there? Do they have Chuck Liddell potentially fight Quentin Jackson before that? Probably not. What are your thoughts on that, if Tito Ortiz becomes the light heavyweight champion once again?
Well, first of all, with all respect to Tito, and I'm actually a fan of Tito, I think the only way he's going to win this fight is if you know, the rapture comes and Chuck disappears, and you know, Tito gets a TKO.
Pretty bold.
Tito gets a TKO victory.
Hold on a second. The last time you made kind of a bold, smart-ass prediction like that, you got burned pretty bad. Remember when I picked Tim Sylvia to beat Andre Arlovsky, and then you made some comment about, the only way it's going to happen is if, you know, the world ends before. But anyways, that's rude of me to interrupt, so go on with your what you were saying.
I'm like a kind of like a reverse Nostradamus.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Well, no, I think if Tito wins, I think that opens up a whole new realm of possibilities. And if Tito wins, it'd probably be the best thing for the UFC.
You think so?
that would be an amazing thing for the UFC.
Just as far because as that the matchups
opens, that opens everything up. There's no obvious matches then. Rampage could fight Chuck on his way back up, and that would keep him from, you know, that would be a fight that they could build outside of a title fight. Keith Jardine could fight Tito in his next challenge or something
Forrest
like
Griffin
that.
Rematch.
Yeah, Forrest Griffin rematch. All sorts of different things. So
I think
UFC it would be the best thing for them if Tito won.
Yeah, but I think if Tito does win, I think it's pretty safe to say that they probably wouldn't go Quinton Jackson, Chuck Liddell before Chuck rematches with Tito, because there'd be too much. I mean, you lose that fight, right? I mean, let's say they have Quinton fight Chuck before Chuck Tito part three, and Chuck loses, then you lose that fight. So I think it's pretty safe to say that they probably would give Chuck one fight before fighting Tito again, or maybe not even. I mean, we saw that with Arlovski and Sylvia. So
yeah, but they're kind of forced into that. I don't think the UFC will be forced into anything like that.
Yeah, true.
And I think they get a lot of blowback from that as well, and rightfully so. And you know, things like that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, and it seems like you're right. You do hear more and more, especially in regards to Matt Hughes, George St. Pierre. There's some speculation now that perhaps that fight is not going to materialize as some thought, as far as it being Matt Hughes' next fight is an immediate rematch with GSP. So
I think it's a done deal. It's not going to materialize.
Yeah. So
and you know, I breathed a sigh of relief too. Like who wants to see that again?
Yeah. Or at least immediately, you know.
You know, I personally would like to see that again, but in terms of the wider viewing audience, I don't think there's no interest, you know. So I think that's good. And I think one of the things about Jackson is they have to be careful. And, you know, all respect to Quinton, but I don't think his best advertisement is not done in the ring. You know, he's got such a dynamic personality, he's such an interesting character, that you've got to build him a little bit more slowly to allow fans to get exposure to that crazy character, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's his cachet. Like, watching Jackson as a fighter, especially over the last year or two, he hasn't been that dynamic. He hasn't, you know, come out with those huge slams, and his fights have actually been not that great to look at.
Yeah.
Sort of a little lackluster. So I think they have to build him very carefully and get him a lot of media exposure outside of the ring, to build him up and make him worth what they probably inevitably will have to pay for him.
You know, you're right. When he was ascending up the Pride ranks, his wins over the likes of Kevin Randleman, the way he ran through Chuck Liddell, I mean, that's when he was at the peak of his game, beating Arona, even though that fight was very, very close until the slam. But you're right. I mean, and then it sort of seemed that once he made it to the top and he lost to Vanderlei once, then re-earned that title shot again and lost again in dramatic fashion, it kind of seemed at that point his usefulness, or not, I mean, that's the incorrect word to use, but as far as his marketability in Pride, it's somewhat decreased. And, of course, immediately what comes to mind is drawing parallel lines between that to Tito Ortiz if he was to lose to Chuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Tito could go, and that's the nice thing about being able to move around to another organization. Like, everyone thought Tito's career was basically done, Quinton's career was basically done when he left Pride. He could go to the UFC. There's basically only two places you can fight, but because there was only two places, you know, you don't want someone else. You don't want to buy someone else's beaten down fighter, right?
Yeah.
So there's lots of places that these guys could go, and it's good for them too, because you can go another place, you fight different fighters, you can build yourself back up again, and you get a fresh start in a different promotion. And I think that's good. The fact that you recognize that there are lots of legitimate fighters out there that are going to lose close fights, and it's good that they have somewhere else to go. Mm. And I think that's just better. It's like I said, and I've always maintained that the sport is no longer, you know, you can't see it as a zero-sum game, that if the UFC wins, then the fighter or some other promotion has to lose. If you share fighters around like that and they can fight in more than one promotion, then, you know, it's not the fact that, you know, you notice this with new observers of the sport. Someone loses a fight, some fighter loses a fight, and they're like, oh my god, they're garbage, and blah, 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 blah. And Joe Riggs is a great example of that. So he wins, he kind of get on a roll, he loses one fight, and then all of a sudden, at 24 years old, he's washed up and has been, and so on.
Yeah.
But, you know, people have to look at this thing in the long term and have some kind of foresight about, you know, what kind of fighters these people are going to turn into, and more opportunities you have to expose yourself and fight different fighters and get second chances, I think the better off everyone's going to be.
It's a good point, buddy, and I like what you're saying. And unfortunately, we got to go. Can't continue the discussion any longer. Merry Christmas, buddy, and to all our listeners, have a happy holidays. And we'll talk to you next week, Brennan.
A very Merry Christmas to all.